Good morning, everybody. It is a brisk fall Saturday morning in the Delaware Valley from Delaware Park Racetrack and Casino. With Ray Dinger, I'm Glenn Macnow. How are you, Ray? Nice to see you always.
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. I'm good. It's football weather today, Ray. Except they're not playing today. They're playing tomorrow. But let's assume it's going to be the same as tomorrow afternoon in a 4:25 start. Your Philadelphia Eagles will host the Minnesota Vikings in what we thought going into the season was going to be a very big game. The Vikings, of course, came here for the NFC Championship game last year. And we thought, oh, they're going to come back with revenge, and it's going to be two really good teams and so on. And you know what? It turns out both teams have really underperformed so far this year. The Eagles at 2-2, the Vikings at 1-2-1. They've really been off to a poor start. We'll get to them coming up, but I do want to just kind of start by asking you if you are able to soothe a city in trepidation, Ray. Can you tell the people as we sit here today at 10:04 on an early Saturday, or early on a Saturday, in early October, everything's okay with the Eagles, just got to find their pace?
I wish I could and do that with good, clear conscience, but I can't. I mean, I think they really have some issues. Now, I guess if you want to do glass half full, glass half empty, the glass half full part of it is that at 2-2, history has demonstrated to us that the Eagles have come back from that before and made the postseason. In fact, I think the last six times they were 2-2, they did in fact make the postseason. So being at 2-2, while it's not where you wanted to be, is certainly, it doesn't mean that your season is over.
Correct.
But
hoping we could just like cruise right into the break right there. All right, everybody, here's the numbers. It's all okay.
No, okay. I don't want to leave it at that.
Yeah.
I have to add this addendum. Okay. Part of it is, how did you get to 2-2? You know, was it an unlucky 2-2? Was it a tip ball, a fluke play, bad call kind of thing that cost you a game that you probably had won and it just slipped through your fingers? Well, I mean, you could kind of make that argument about last week's game, I suppose, but the greater issue is, though, this team has not played well in a couple of really big spots. And so there is genuine concern about that. There's some genuine concern about some injuries. And just a general kind of feeling of unease around the team right now that is concerning. But at 2-2, and I repeat this, at 2-2, you are not dead, especially in this division. So if you're looking for hope, that's about the best I could do for you.
Ray, I'm not sure if you've noticed this over the course of the first month. I do trust you as a football authority, but this might have eluded you. They don't seem to cover the pass very well. Have you noticed that at all? Have you seen evidence of that?
I have seen ample evidence of that. And you're playing a team tomorrow that can exploit that to a great degree. You know, Kirk Cousins has merely thrown more passes than any quarterback in football through 4 weeks. So, you know, you're bringing a team in here that absolutely wants to throw the ball, largely because they can't run the ball. And he's got receivers that can do a lot of damage. Yeah. I mean, Thielen is on a pace to catch 160 passes, and Stephon Diggs is a big play player. And, you know, the tight end, Rudolph, is very good in the middle of the field. So the biggest concern I think most Eagles fans have is, oh, man, our secondary. We have trouble against the pass. Well, guess what? You're going up against a team tomorrow that I guarantee you is going to throw it 50 times.
All right, so then the question becomes, and we'll break down all specifics of that game as the show goes on, but the question becomes, how did they get here? Because nobody had written down that they were going to lose the Bucs in Tampa, and as good of a start the Bucs got off to this season, they've obviously returned to earth.
Yeah, I mean, they got exposed by the Bears, sure.
Yeah. And Tennessee is a team, they finished 9-7 last year and made the playoffs, but I don't think a lot of Eagle fans had this team going down and losing there. So the question becomes, how did we get here? And there's two questions I'll ask you about. The hangover, but we'll get to that second. But I am starting to think that they miss a lot of guys more than maybe we thought they would.
Okay.
And I'm talking about both coaches in Frank Reich and DeFilippo. By the way, DeFilippo, the offensive coordinator of the Vikings now.
Yep.
He landed with a pretty good gig, didn't he?
Sure did.
Okay.
He's got some pieces to work with.
He does, and I think they miss those guys, and I also think they miss a lot of the players. Listen, teams are never the same year to year. Guys come, guys go. That's just the nature of the game, and you have to kind of compensate for that. But clearly they miss LeGarrette Blount. Hold on. There was another name I was about to throw out there. Bear with me. Who else do they miss? I'm drawing a blank on the name. And
Are you thinking Trey Burton?
Trey Burton. Yeah, they miss Trey Burton. They miss
on defense, Selleck, you're missing Kendricks. On defense, you're missing Vinnie Curry. On defense, you're missing Bo Allen. Are any of those the guys you were thinking about?
No, actually, I was thinking about the safety who was hurt. But that's
That's a huge one.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that was just a last week development.
But I'll go with Reich, and I'll go with LeGarrette Blount, and I'll go with DeFilippo. And, hey, you win, that's the cost of winning. Guys move on.
Oh, Brent Celek.
And Celek. But I think that's really hurt him. I think it's hurt him in the running game, and I think it hurt him in the offense. And I think not having Frank Reich there last week, and DeFilippo's really hurt him in the red zone and on third downs.
They certainly aren't as good there. Now you can analyze that a number of different ways. How much the coaching impacts that? Probably some. A lot of it will come back to just simple execution. I mean, they're just not executing very well. The offensive line, which I think we all kind of thought was going to be a real strength on this team, and should be, given the personnel you have there, has not been. They were really poor, really poor in Tennessee, to the point where it looks like there's going to be at least one personnel change during tomorrow's game. It looks like Ike Siamalo is going to step in at left guard for Stefan Wisniewski, who... He just had a brutally bad game on Saturday. On Sunday. I'm not surprised. The funny thing about the coaching decision being made the way it was made, it's almost like he's being singled out as, oh, here's the problem.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, and it's not just him.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, nobody on the line played well last
week. And by the way, the coach has not really confirmed that. The news came out early yesterday, and then Doug Peterson was asked about it yesterday afternoon, and he really wouldn't confirm it, but... by indications, that's what's going to happen. Is Samalo is going to start for Wisniewski?
No, he's getting first-team snaps in practice. So, that tells you all you need to know.
I'm really concerned about the guy that was left.
Yeah.
At least through four games, Jason Peters, who defied age for many, many years and is a Hall of Famer in this league and is a great member of the team as a teammate and as a player, is looking real bad out there. And I saw something last week that I don't know I've ever seen, which is him kind of get manhandled.
Yeah, he got shoved around. He got actually thrown into Wentz at one point.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
I've never seen it before either. That one's a little harder. Well, no. I was going to say that one's a little harder to figure. That would have been a little harder to predict. I think he's hurt. I think it's as simple as that. Because the opening night game against Atlanta, I mean, he played great in that game. I mean, I was kind of curious to see how, you know, this guy at his age with basically no work in preseason, didn't play a snap in the preseason, you know, how was he going to come out and play opening night at his age with his history of injury, coming back from a big injury? I was watching him in that game against Atlanta, and, man, I mean, he was tossing guys around, and he had Vic Beasley on the ground all night, and I walked away and said, well, okay, that's not a problem. You know, Jason Peters is back, and he's Jason Peters again. But the next week down in Tampa, one of the things that happened early in that game, which I think kind of began, was the first domino that fell that day, was he went limping off with a quad injury. And it's clear to me he hasn't been the same since. Now, to what degree that's still bothering him, I don't know. He's going to play tomorrow. But the question is, how effectively will he play? In the Atlanta game, he was terrific. I mean, he answered all the questions you could have possibly asked about where he was at this point. But then the Tampa Bay game, he hurts the quad, and he hasn't been the same player since.
And a challenge to all this, of course, is now they have two games in 12 days. Two games in 5 days.
Right.
Because after tomorrow, that you go again up to New York and you play the Giants on Thursday.
Right.
So anybody who's hurt, you are not going to get that recovery time anytime soon. And at a record of 2-2, nobody can afford to sit. You don't have the luxury at all.
No. Now, these next 5 days, I mean, we could look back on this as the pivot point for this whole season. It really, I mean, it really could. I mean, I don't want to, you know, be Mr. Overly Dramatic or anything, but you look at the way their schedule plays out, and you know, when you asked me the question to start the show, is how concerned should you be at 2-2? Yeah, my concern is the fact that you had four games here that, when you looked at, you probably said, at worst, would be 3-1. You've lost two games that I don't think anybody thought you were really going to lose, and now you're going into a stretch of the next four games where it's going to really be tough. I mean, the Vikings, despite their record, are still a dangerous team. You have the Giants on the road on a short week, and then after that, you have Carolina, who's playing very well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to go get on a plane, fly to London, and play Jacksonville in an environment that they're far more comfortable with than you are. If the Eagles lose tomorrow, and somehow stumble in New York.
No, you can't lose in New York. I agree.
The
if you're
Giants
two,
are terrible, but
if,
what I'm saying is
no,
if you fall to 2-4 and now you got those two games coming up, I don't know that you come back from that.
I agree. If you're 2-4, you're in big trouble. I do think there's a possibility that they'll be 4-4, and I think if they're 4-4 but healthy, they'll be okay just by nature of the division. I mean, you're not going to have the home field advantage. But by nature of the division, I believe there's a good chance they're going to be 4-4. And to me, if they're 4-4, there's still a better than even chance that you're going to win this division. But you are digging yourself in a little bit of a hole. No,
you really are.
That.
Yeah, you really are. And the other part is, if you really are thinking about defending your championship, then getting home field in the postseason is enormous.
Well, we've seen it.
And if you drop to 4-4, guess what? That's gone, because the Rams are not going to lose.
You'll be chartering
games.
A plane to L.A.
Yeah, exactly.
No question. Let's get Chris in Wilmington. Chris, you're on with Ray and Glenn. Good morning.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Two things with the Eagles, and I think they're both fixable. One, after last year, going back to the Kansas City game, which they lost, they threw it a gazillion times in that game.
Yeah.
Last week, you know, they threw it. Well, we would have went through it 50 times. I don't
50,
know how many times
50 passes, back. 4 sacks, 2 scrambles, so 56 right. Versus 20 designed run plays,
right.
And that's
inexcusable. And I believe, I don't have the stats in front of it, you guys might, but they were actually running it at a fairly good clip last week.
Yeah, they averaged 5 yards a carry.
All right, there you go. Now, once they changed and they started becoming more run dominant last year, they played better. Now, part of that was forced on Pearson. I mean, I think Pearson, you know, he's got to, when he gets these toys, like last year, Darren Sproles was his toy that he used early. When Sproles went out, he went to LeGarrette Blount, and guess what? They started running better. Yeah. Now, their toy this year, he got Carson Wentz back, so he drops him back however many times last week, and they forget about the running game.
It was really annoying, and thanks for your call. It really hurt him. And then what was interesting is kind of in overtime he discovered the run and was running effectively.
They moved the ball very effectively.
Is there part – do you believe that part of the issue may be he just doesn't think he's got the healthy running backs? He doesn't want to give Ajayi the ball too much because he knows he's limited.
Right.
He doesn't trust Smallwood, which I agree with him. He didn't have Corey Clement last week. He no longer has LeGarrette Blount. He hasn't had Sproles at all. And, you know, he's not going to give the ball to the rookie, to Adams. So do you think his hand is forced? Or do you think he believes his hand is forced?
To some degree, yeah. I think that he was just looking at his manpower during the week in practice. And he said, well, you know, Ajayi, you know, we're going to play him, but I don't know how long he's going to be able to go. I got Smallwood. Oh, brother. What am I going to do with him?
Yeah, nice blitz cover.
And then, I don't know if Clement. I don't know if Sproles. You know, Adams is healthy, but I can't play him. Yeah, I'm down to Ajayi, who every carry, I'm holding my breath as to whether he's going to be able to carry it again. And Smallwood, who scares me to death. So when he's putting the game plan together, he's not thinking about running the ball a whole lot. So, I think that had a lot to do with it. But even then, when you saw some of the success that you did have when you did run it, and for what we're saying about Smallwood, we do have to keep in mind Smallwood averaged about 8 yards a carry in the game. I mean, mm-hmm. Smallwood actually, I mean, he has huge issues in terms of picking up the blitz. Like, he can't. But
he blocked the wrong guy, or he went to the wrong
hole. Went the wrong way.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even a hard one to see. I mean, the guy's right in the gap. I mean, he actually moved away from him to block somebody else and opened up the door for the guy to get on top of Wentz. I mean, that's been a problem for him for his whole time here, and unless he gets better, he's never going to get a bigger role.
Well, Ray, here's the thing. Coming up later in the show, we're going to hit a break right now, and we're going to take some phone calls on the other side, and we're going to do our stupid football bet update. But coming up later in the show, Ray, there is the name of a running back, pretty good one, floating around out there that they might be able to get.
Oh, yeah?
888-729-9494. As the show goes on, we will certainly work in the Phillies. Amazing radio this week with Gabe Kapler and Angelo Cataldi. And amazing in a different way, a news conference that, to me, the general manager, or excuse me, team president Andy McPhail conducted this week. Ah, what's the rush? It's a good free agent class in 2036. And we'll get some Flyers and Sixers, and Ray will do his college football update. All of that and more from Delaware Park Racetrack and Casino with Ray Dinger. I'm Glenn Mack now on 94 WIP. Well, Ray Dinger, this year's stupid football bet, which has a payoff of dinner at the Palm for you and me and a bunch of producers, stood at 3-3 going into this week. We each kind of drafted our team of favorite Eagles, and their total touchdowns for the year decides the winner. You have Corey Clement, not playing, Nelson Aguilar, not playing well, Dallas Goedert, underused, Darren Sproles. And I want to ask you if you think we may never see him again.
Right.
And we just took one defensive guy. You took Malcolm Jenkins for his escapability, touchdown possibilities. You had three touchdowns going into this week, one from Clement, one from Aguilar, one from Goddard. I have Zach Ertz, who's having a fine season but hasn't gotten in the end zone yet.
Right.
Got a ton of catches. I have Alshon Jeffrey, who came back. We'll talk about him in a moment. I have Mike Wallace. That's not going to yield me a whole lot.
No.
I'm maybe out of luck on that one. I have Ronald Darby as my defensive player. And I have Jay Ajayi, who playing hurt, still has all three of my touchdowns. So we were tied at three going into the week.
Yeah.
Neither of us exactly setting the world on fire.
Too bad you're not getting credit for Darby's missed tackles. You'd be leading by the counters would be over by now.
Yeah, let's figure out a bet where I get Darby and you get Jalen Mills. See what we can work out of that. All right, anyway, here we go. We go to Tennessee. The Eagles are down 3-0. It is the second quarter. The Eagles at their own 44-yard line. We're going to see, does Carson Wentz still have the capability of making a long play? And who's he going to make it to, Ray? Well, here's this. Merrill, very excited there. Jordan Matthews comes back. He did drop a pass later. We've seen that before. But they needed that kind of deep ball threat. I mean, he's not a total speedster, but he's got pretty good speed. They needed somebody. He came in. He caught a touchdown. Nice to see.
It was. And, I mean, that's why claiming him, I know when the Eagles claimed him, when they had the Wallace injury, a lot of people rolled their eyes and said, oh, no, Jordan Matthews. But it made sense. I mean, it really made sense because the guy knows this offense. He already has a very healthy relationship with Carson Wentz. They know each other. They have confidence in each other. I mean, this was a guy that could come in and step in immediately with no lost time. So I thought it was a perfectly logical signing. And you've seen in 2 weeks now, he hasn't been a huge factor, but he's contributed. And that touchdown last week was, look, if you overload the coverage one way and you get him a single go coming out of the slot, he can make that play. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying he's going to be Odell Beckham Jr., although at this point he's got more touchdowns than Odell Beckham Jr. But he's not by nature a big play guy, but he can get one once in a while if the coverage allows that.
Meanwhile, it yields points for neither of us because neither of us have him or Wendell Smallwood, who scored a touchdown the week before, so we get nothing for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But, Ray, here we go. It's the third quarter. The Eagles are up 10-0. And they're going to add to their lead right here. They're on the 16-yard line of the Tennessee Titans. It is a third down, and Wentz is about to do this. 12 plays, 75-yard. That took 7.5 minutes off the quarter. They really had some great ball control drives in that game. Unfortunately, they blew the whole thing and lost the game. But Alshon Jeffrey, who is back off of injury, is looking really good so far, gets the touchdown. And, Ray, I now lead you 4-3 at the quarter pole of what has kind of been a very desultory bet with neither of us really showing that well.
That would be true. That'd be very fair to say. But, you know, even in that drive, and you're right. I mean, it was a long drive, score, and winds up scoring a touchdown, takes time off the clock. Those are all good things. But even within that drive, the Eagles have got you smacking your head saying, what are you guys doing? I mean, they get down, they have a first and goal at the 8. Wentz throws the pass to Aguilar, who gets stripped, fumbles the ball, almost fumbles it away. They manage to retain possession, but they still lose 7 yards. So instead of being first and goal from the 8, now you're at the 15-yard line. Then on the next play, Brooks gets called for holding. So now you get walked back another 10 yards.
Yeah.
Then on the next play, Kamir Aiken, he gets called for holding. You get walked back another 10 yards. And now you've got goal to go from the 25-yard line. Now they score a touchdown because Wentz hits Jeffrey for the touchdown. And it goes on the board of 7 points. But you look at that and you say, what are you guys doing?
Mm-hmm.
You took yourselves from this 8-yard line back to the 25 on your own mistakes now, and you salvage it with a touchdown. But is that the kind of football that's going to win you a championship? I don't think so.
Yeah. Very distressing. And you had they blew a 17-3 lead.
Yep.
They gave it's been talked about all week, so I don't want to deep dive into it too much. 4th and 15. Was there a 3rd and 21? I don't know. They gave up so many big, bad plays there. It was a very discouraging game.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you the situations in that final drive. Tennessee gets a 3rd and 10. Then they go to 4th and 10.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go to 4th and 15. They convert that with the 4th and 15 play, which we've talked about all week with Corey Graham.
Unbelievable.
Makes just an incredibly boneheaded mistake and lets Taylor get behind him for a 19-yard catch. But then, okay, you sort of regroup and you get them into another 4th down. Now it's 4th and 4. You let them convert that one. Okay, then they get the next possession. And Mariota gets a sack. And now you moved them back. Now they're in a situation where they're 3rd and 19. And you let them complete that little screen pass. You miss 2 tackles, one of them by Darby.
Yeah.
And he gains back virtually all that yardage and turns 3rd and 19 into 4th and a makeable 2. They convert that, and then they go on and get the touchdown. So to allow 3 4th down conversions in one possession in overtime is the kind of thing only bad teams do. And this isn't a bad team, but I guess the only way you can describe it, it's a good team playing badly.
It's a good team playing poorly.
And so that's where you are right now. And the question could be asked, well, what kind of, you know, who are the Eagles right now? Well, you know what? I think you're going to find out tomorrow. I think you will find out tomorrow.
I'll just tell you right now, because fold a piece of paper's coming up.
Yeah.
I feel all right about it.
Do you?
I do. I feel all right about tomorrow.
Okay.
We'll move in that direction. I wanted to review last week's game, but we'll talk about it. Jeremiah in Pottstown wants to talk about a player he thinks the Eagles are missing big time.
No, I don't think they miss LeGarrette Blount.
Oh, you don't?
No, I don't. I believe that last week's game they lost was a result of bad coaching. Bad coaching when you don't run the ball. And I understand where you guys come from with the running backs, but you still have to have a more balanced attack.
Oh, we agree. We don't disagree with you. Can't both things be true?
Yeah, I guess I do see your point a little bit, but I'm sorry. I'm just so frustrated with the coaching of this team. I'm not worried about this team. I'm worried about the coaching of this team. Ray, tell me if I'm wrong in this. Last week on that last drive, why is Maddox covering on that last play? Why is he in coverage?
Because he was. That was his. They were in a. They actually blitzed, and that was his pickup.
Okay, why have him in that type of situation? Why not Rasul Douglas? Why not Corey Graham? If you're gonna play him, why is he not blitzing? Why is he in coverage?
Why is Maddox in coverage?
Yes.
Because he's taking on those snaps now. I mean, they started him at safety. I kind of see where you're going with this, and I don't really disagree with you. I don't think Maddox is a safety. Maddox, with his size and his inexperience, he's been a corner his whole life. You take him and you put him in the slot. Okay, he's essentially still playing the cornerback position. You put him at safety, and that's a whole new position for a guy who I think is a little undersized to play it in the first place. That's why the decision to put him. Look, I like Maddox as a player. I liked him when they drafted him. I think he can play, but I don't think you're doing him any favors at this point in his career to put him at a whole new position and ask him to do the things that Rodney McLeod was doing. But that's kind of where they found themselves.
You and I got together earlier this week. We did an event for Cooper Hospital with the Cooper Docs. And one of the things we talked about is, okay, if Rodney McLeod's out, what are you going to do with safety? And your idea was none of what they've done so far, you think the guy they should be looking at is?
Jalen Mills.
Yeah.
And I said it on the postgame show. I mean, I was looking at all the options they had and looking at all the problems that Mills is having right now, and Lord knows we've certainly spent the whole week talking about those. And I said on the postgame show, I said, you know, would it be a ridiculous idea to think about taking Jalen Mills and moving him to safety? Take Sidney Jones, who you drafted to be an outside border shutdown corner, and put him out there playing basically where you drafted him to play anyway. And then you can take Maddox, and you can put him in as your slot defender, and he's playing in the position that he should kind of play. I mean, it's almost like a Phillies thing. You're kind of putting guys in positions where they fit, as opposed to putting them in positions that they've never
can
played
Carlos
before.
Can Carlos Santana play safety? Do we know? can we stick Kingery out there somewhere?
He'll take a lot of pitches, I know that. But, I mean, that was my thought. But here's the thing. I mean, I threw that out there, and both Seth and Barrett immediately just said, no. No, you can't do it. First of all, neither one of them are ready to give up on Jalen Mills, nor am I as a player. I like him as a player, but I think it's undeniable he's going through a really bad time right now. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought that with his size, and the guy's almost 6'2", and the fact that he's a pretty good tackler, and I think he's physical enough to play the safety position, what's his biggest liability? His biggest liability is his raw speed.
Yeah.
So that is less of a problem if he's playing safety than if he's playing outside a corner. So, I mean, for all of those reasons, I kind of thought it made sense, but no one else in the panel seemed to agree with me. But that's, I mean, if it were up to me, that's what I would try. I would try and put Mills at the safety position. I would put Sidney Jones out on the corner, and I would make Maddox my slot defender.
All right, coming up, I'm gonna give you an update on the last fan standing pool. You know, there have been a whole lot of people get knocked out of that.
I know that
over the course of the first 3 weeks, we'll see if last week was any quieter. And we talked a little bit about the running back situation and who's playing it. Maybe there's somebody out there who could help. 888-729-9494. He's Ray Dinger. I'm Glenn Mack now. We're at the Delaware Park Racetrack and Casino on 94WIP. Hey, if you have prostate cancer, you should know about CyberKnife. CyberKnife uses painless precision in the fight against prostate cancer without surgery. Just 5 CyberKnife treatments instead of 40 daily treatments saves you time. Find out more online at PhillyCyberKnife.com. That's PhillyCyberKnife.com. It's your prostate, your cancer. It's your choice. Go to PhillyCyberKnife.com. This was a paid advertisement from Philadelphia CyberKnife, a service of Delaware County Memorial Hospital. All right, Ray, before we get back into it, I just want to tell you the last fan standing pool, which had about 14,000 hopefuls going in, after 3 weeks of craziness, calm was restored. So all these major upsets at the beginning of the season cut the pool to 987 people in just 3 weeks. I'm talking 93% of the people who were in it got knocked out in the first 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Thank you, Saints. Thank you, Vikings. One or two other big games along the way, big upsets. But there you go. So we had 987 people as last week began. More carnage than I've ever seen. We've been doing this, what, 15 years?
Oh, yeah.
Most carnage I've ever seen. The good news, at least for those still in it, no such calamity last weekend. We only dropped 119 people, which takes the pool down to 868, still clamoring for that ring from Mark's Jewelers. Of course, the big loser of the week, the big upset of the week, was the Eagles in Tennessee, at least in the pool, that knocked out 36 people.
No, I would thought that surprises me. I thought it would have taken up more than that.
No, 36. The Colts and the Falcons took out a few as well. But we are down to 868, excuse me, people of the original 14,000. Make sure you get your picks in this week, and good luck to you. All right, I'm going to go back to the phones in a second. But we've talked a lot about running back today. They don't run the ball enough. Do they miss LeGarrette Blount? You got big problems because Jay Ajayi, and by the way, a lot of credit to Jay Ajayi playing hurt last week.
Oh, yes.
I mean, he's got a back issue, and he's gotten it out, and I give him a lot of credit for that. Wendell Smallwood filled in. I know he's run effectively, but the guy, he can't block. He can't catch a pass. He's very limited. He's a fumble waiting to happen.
Got to run him between the tackles. If you run him straight ahead, he's not too bad.
Yeah, he can run effectively.
And he runs hard. He breaks tackles. For a guy that's not that big, he's a physical runner.
Yeah.
But he has limitations, and pass protection being foremost among them.
Corey Clement hurt. I don't know how much, if at all, he's going to play tomorrow. We haven't seen Darren Sproles at all this year as an older player.
Opener.
Oh, yeah, that's right, opener.
Well, but he hasn't played since.
Right, and his future very uncertain. Ray, the rumors are starting to come out that the Eagles are sniffing around about Le'Veon Bell. And I just keep dismissing this thing, going, that's silly. It's not their style to get somebody to whom they have to turn over the whole offense and running game. This is a team that uses running back by committee. He's kind of, at least, I've never met him, but I think he's a bad guy to walk out on his team. He doesn't earn any points as a teammate. Clearly, and his teammates in Pittsburgh are furious at him, so do you want to bring that guy in? He's not familiar with the offense. There's a lot of reasons that you think, like, no, this can't happen, let alone you got to give up something if you trade for him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it would be. Second-round pick? I don't know. But the more I dismiss it, the more it keeps coming back as a possibility. A lot of the guys who cover the NFL said the Eagles have had it in their mind for a while. Again, I don't know that those guys have a ton of credibility because they could be getting it from Le'Veon Bell's agent. There's always a lot of deception in reports like that.
Uh-huh.
Joe Banner, who now works for or with The Athletic, did a whole thing this week about how much sense it makes for the Eagles to do it. And if giving up a second-round pick for Le'Veon Bell is the thing that can bring you back to the Super Bowl and reinvigorate your offense, you do it. And then there was a piece that said, well, they'd have to figure it out under the cap. They'd have to renegotiate a contract. Most likely Fletcher Cox has got a contract that you could work with him to renegotiate. A lot of guys in this team have done it. Zach Ertz, Brandon Brooks, Malcolm Jenkins, Lane Johnson, they've all done this to help the team. You'd go to Fletcher Cox and say, would you do it? I want to say this is ridiculous on its face and this is not going to happen. Except a lot of people say this could happen.
Hmm.
So I go to you.
Well, I'm surprised that Captain Salary Cap is one of the people that's beating the drum.
Oh, let me read you Joe Banner's quote. If I said to you you're giving up a second-round pick, which you'd probably get back a third-round pick a year later. By the way, that's part of it is you'd get if he leaves in free agency, you get a compensatory pick.
Mm-hmm.
So he's saying, what are you giving up, a second for a third? For a guy who may be able to be the difference between winning the Super Bowl or not, I think most people would say that's worth it. Joe Banner in The Athletic.
Well, just looking at it in practical terms, there's no way you could re-sign him after this year. So
no.
you're looking at him purely as a half-season rental.
Correct.
You're also assuming that he's going to show up ready to play.
Correct.
You're also assuming he hasn't been laying in a Barco lounger for the last 6 months, watching reruns of Family Feud. You know, I mean,
is that your dream, right?
Huh?
Is that your dream?
Actually, kind of appeal. The idea kind of appeals to me. Yeah,
a little bit. I noticed as you said it, your mind started to drift off.
I've been known to watch a Family Feud rerun now and again.
Maria, you're in the way. Come on.
But only the Richard Dawson ones.
Much better.
Yeah, the other host never quite had the panache.
No, the smarminess was always better with
him. Yeah, so. But I guess we kind of got off topic.
Yes, Le'Veon Bell.
Okay. Yeah, okay, right to Le'Veon Bell. That's kind of the way you look at it because he and his agent are going – I mean, they want like a ridiculously large amount of money. In fact, he walked away from the largest contract that was ever offered to an NFL running back year when his agent was down on his knees begging him to sign it.
Yes.
He didn't want to sign it. I mean, he wants to be paid more than any running back in the history of football. For a guy that's played a lot of football and has a lot of wear on him,
yep.
Nobody's going to commit to that kind of money.
No, and he's not helping his value right now.
No. No. So there are two factors to this. Number one is you're trusting the fact that he is in shape, that he can come in and step in and play. And the other part is the admission that, look, when we get him, there's no way we're going to be able to give him the kind of money he wants for a long-term contract because, number one, we don't want to commit to a running back for a long-term contract for that kind of money. And number two, we're in a position where we got to save that money to sign Carson, to extend Carson Wentz.
Let's just stipulate it's clearly a rental for this season and you hope the postseason, which, by the way, you hope he doesn't just pull some kind of act in the postseason and go like, yeah, my pinky hurts, I can't play.
Mm-hmm.
Worried about his future contract. But here we are.
Well, but some of the things that he says has bothered me. Like some of, and I know he's just, a lot of what he's saying is sort of posturing or
bluster.
Yeah, a little bit. But I mean, there's some things in there that he says that if I'm a coach, I'm going to look at it and say, oh, really? I mean, this idea that, you know, when I come in, I need to talk to the coaches because I can't be carrying the ball as many times as I used to carry the ball before. I mean, look at, you know, I'm getting 350, 400 touches in Pittsburgh. That's going to shorten my career. I need to be a guy that's going to come in, and I don't want to be used too much. I don't want to be overused. I don't want to come in somewhere as a rental and have somebody use me up and just throw me out on the market. I mean, his whole attitude, if I get the feeling that this is a guy that's chomping at the bit, dying to come in and play, I would feel one way about it. A lot of what he's saying now to me sounds like a guy who's rather ambivalent about everything except the money.
Yeah, and I think he's certainly poisoning the waters in Pittsburgh.
So I guess it's a bottom line, this whole thing. I guess I'm saying is, no, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't do it?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I mean, I'm willing to wait out. I'm willing to wait out, you know, the return of Sproles and return of Clement. And if you get those guys back, you know, you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I want to go down this road because I think it's only going to complicate the situation.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I didn't know what you would say, but I just see it as trouble.
We've had a lot of these conversations now because of the way the season's going. We've had a lot of these conversations. Hey, go get Josh Gordon.
Right.
Hey, go get Dez Bryant. Hey, go get Le'Veon Bell. You know, wait a minute.
By the way, of the three, I would take Le'Veon Bell, but yeah, I'm not reaching out for that.
Yeah, I mean, let's wait a minute. I'm saying, hold on. You're the defending Super Bowl champs. You won a Super Bowl in February. I mean, you really want to go out and you really need to.
You know why?
What has Josh Gordon ever won?
I think
what has Dez Bryant ever won? You know, they're going to come in here to a Super Bowl champion, and they're going to be the difference makers.
No, I think a lot of people see it as a Belichick kind of move, though. The Belichick's always willing to shake it up and bring in that guy. And look, he's been a, you know, 9 Super Bowls, so let's do that.
Hasn't always worked.
No, it hasn't
didn't
always
worked with Ochocinco.
Ochocinco, yes.
I mean, sometimes people focus on the cases that do work.
Right, Randy Moss.
But even, you know, even Belichick has swung and missed in this spot too.
Yep.
So it's by no means guaranteed.
You think Le'Veon Bell ends up back in Pittsburgh, or you think he gets traded, or you think he just sits the season?
I'll tell you, I don't. From what I'm hearing from the people in Pittsburgh, they're done with him.
Yeah.
I mean, they
particularly if they're out of it. And
yeah.
If they're out of it because, in part, they think he didn't show up, why do we want you back?
Yeah. I think – but he doesn't want to sit out the season because then he loses a whole year.
Right.
So, I mean, he wants to come back and play. But I don't know right now the situation in Pittsburgh. I mean, maybe they're desperate enough at that point that they will take him back. But it's going to be – good luck for Mike Tomlin keeping peace in that locker room.
It's pretty toxic. Let's go to Rasheem in North Philly. Thanks for hanging. You're on 94 WIP.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
I totally disagree as far as we all know Jason Peters is getting up there in age, but the guy who's responsible for 2 turnovers and back-to-back games is Lane Johnson. Pro Football Focus has Lane Johnson. No, but this is the second week. I could see if this was the first week and then it was only one turnover, but back-to-back games and he got schooled by a rookie. Pro Football Focus has Jason Peters the overall better tackle right now. I disagree.
Hold on. I put no stock in Pro Football Focus's ratings of offensive linemen. That said, Lane Johnson has not been playing well for what you expect. No question about it.
Well, Pro Football Focus does hurries, the run grade, and the pass grade.
I know.
So pretty much it's the eye test. It's not so much about math.
Okay.
It's pretty much just looking at and understanding that Jason Peters is playing better than Lane Johnson right now. Moving Jalen Mills and then to safety, I disagree with that because Ronald Darby hasn't played any much better than what Jalen Mills plays. So if I heard people want to, you know, bench Jalen Mills, bench Ronald Darby, because tell me something that you've seen from Ronald Darby in the last couple of games that's
missed tackles
that he's played, huh?
I've seen missed tackles.
Okay, right, and bad coverage.
Yeah.
So like,
no, they're both playing poorly. I don't. Exactly. I mean, I know you want to weigh. Peters versus Johnson, they're both playing poorly. It's because Peters is 36 and coming off an injury, and so people want – when it's Lane Johnson, you think, oh, he's in a slump. When it's Jason Peters, it's like, uh-oh, did he get old?
Maybe he's done, yeah.
Right. Sure. That's two different concerns. Yeah, that's the difference. But that said, he brings up a good point. Lane Johnson had a horrible game last week.
Yes, he did. He did not play well.
Any of the line play well?
What's that?
Did any of the line play well, or does it become such a train wreck, such a fire drill that nobody can look like they played well?
I can't tell you any of them did. Yeah. I can't tell you any of them did. And we talked a little bit about this last week when I said I thought there was going to be a real challenge for the Eagles' offensive line going up against Tennessee, which is a team they don't see hardly at all.
Yeah.
And with Vrabel, with a new coach and a new defensive coordinator, Dean Pease, who's both of them really are guys that they move their front seven around a lot, and they blitz a lot, they overload blitz a lot, they stunt and they loop. I mean, they do, and they have that thing where they have some guys with their hands on the ground, other guys sort of walking around right before the snap of the ball. You never know quite who's going to be coming and where they're going to be coming.
Mm-hmm.
They're a real pain in the neck to play against and block is kind of what I'm saying. And I thought that initially, at least, it was going to give the Eagles' offensive line some problems. But what disappointed me, I guess, is I've always thought that the Eagles, one of the strengths of the Eagles with this coaching staff, is I think they're really good at adjusting things within a game. I mean, I've seen them have problems with things in the first half of a game and then go into the locker room and come out in the second half and they've repaired it. And you come out in the second half and they're shoring up the areas that they were giving up plays in the first half. That was not the case here.
Yeah.
The Eagles in the third and the fourth quarter seemed just as baffled by what Tennessee was doing defensively as they were early. The one thing that they were able to do, which I guess you can only blame Doug for this, is he just wasn't willing to run the ball. The one way you can deal with that kind of a defensive front, where you have that kind of movement and that kind of deception and everything, is just run at it. You know, if you sit back and you throw the ball, you call 55 pass plays, then you're playing right into the strength of what they want you to do. When the Eagles had some success was when they just lined up and ran the ball at those guys. And sometimes, guess what? When they're moving or they're stunning, you hit an area that's open, and all of a sudden a back turns, and he's through there for 15, 20 yards.
Ray, I write a column for the Metro every week, and this is what I wrote earlier in the week. Tell me if you disagree. I said, blame for this loss, the worst of the Doug Peterson era, can be spread from the coach's inane play calling and inability to adjust to the offense's drop passes and failure to protect the quarterback. To the defense's dreadful coverage and inept tackling. The only men who can hold their high up at the NovaCare Complex this week are Alshon Jeffrey and Carson Wentz. There may be a few others as well, but that was my take.
Well, I can't disagree with any of that.
888-729-9494, your call's coming up. In the 11 o'clock hour, we will work the other teams in. Did you stay up all night and watch the Flyers?
I actually did watch a good portion.
There you
of
go.
The,
I watched
the
first
Vegas
period
game.
And change. Did you wake up at the crack of dawn and watch the Sixers in China?
I can't say I did. No.
Okay. And by the way, also in the 11 o'clock hour, Ray Dittinger's College Football Weekly Report, which is always fun. 888-729-9494 from Delaware Park Racetrack and Casino. He's Ray. I'm Glenn on 94 WIP. Ray Dittinger, Glenn Mack now. It's an October Saturday morning in the Delaware Valley. Joe wants to talk about the Eagles, I believe, tackling. Is that correct?
It always has been.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, what? That didn't sound like Joe, nor did that person sound ready. So we know we put you on hold. We appreciate that you got to wait, but when we come to you, you got to be there. You can't be handing the phone to your wife. Well, you can be, but she better have a good point.
She was concerned about their tackling.
She didn't appear to be. She appeared to be in another conversation. So, Joe, you're welcome to call back. Meanwhile, we'll get to Walt in Delaware. You're on 94 WIP. Hey, Walt.
Hey, how you doing, fellas?
Good.
Every Saturday.
Thank you.
Anyway, there's one factor in the whole running back discussion that's never come up, and that's a guy that's on the roster, wouldn't cost you a dime. Jordan Mulata. What do you think of that?
I love the pregnant pause of silence from Ray.
Wait a minute. Well, let me just try and get my arms around this one. Are you proposing Mulata to take over on the offensive line for some of the linemen that are playing poorly, or do you want Mulata to become a running back?
Well, either one. Yeah, well, he could use him like a refrigerator Barry type of fullback. It would certainly be a surprise. Right now, they don't seem to have Clemens banged up and Jai, you know, on a short 1 yard plunge, he'd be the guy. Would certainly catch the other team off guard, wouldn't it?
Would certainly catch me off guard. Wait a minute. Let me back up a second here.
You're on your own here.
Are you serious about this?
I'm dead serious.
That's what I was afraid of. Okay.
Clips. The cat can run with a ball in his hands.
Uh huh. And how much?
And
how
can
much
run people over?
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are you basing that on?
Ray, I saw the tapes from down under of him running over 5'9" guys.
Yeah, you saw him running over all those 160-pound Australians.
Yeah.
That's the NFL. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now,
yeah. You know, I really think you're onto something. I have Doug Peterson's inside phone number. I think I was just going to pass that along to you. Why don't you give him a call and run this by him? I think that, and you know, they have a practice today, and it's a late start tomorrow. They could probably get some work in the morning. They might be able to have this thing up and running by 4:25 tomorrow. Thank you. It's really on to something. Thanks. Hey, that was great.
You want more? Or should I move
No,
on?
I think that was sufficient.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ray, it's a little more brusque than you usually are.
I mean, seriously. I mean, this team, they're the Super Bowl champions.
Yeah.
We're four games into this season.
Yeah.
Are we really to the point where the answer to everything that's wrong is to take a guy that's never played a game of football and hand him the ball and say, Jordan Mulata, save our season? Are we really that far to the edge of the plank that's really where we are right now?
I don't know. William Perry, by the way, when he was doing that, had maybe 8 or 10 carries for the season, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they would bring him in as like a novelty once every couple of games, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was a blocking back for the most part.
Yeah.
And then like a couple of times they gave him the ball just for,
including by the way in the Super Bowl,
just for chuckles.
Seemed pretty unfair to.
Well, when they gave it to him at the 1 yard line and didn't give it to Walter Payton.
That's what I'm saying. So you know that seems a little unfair, but nonetheless, yes, this guy wants him to get it on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just want to check and make sure that doesn't work for you. He in his career had 8 carries in 4 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So just letting you know that.
Sounds plausible to me. There, I mean, there's a real, that's a real track record.
All right.
I mean,
you know what?
That's what I'm basing
on. Okay, Ray. I'm there aren't a lot of callers that set you off. That one got you going, huh?
I'm thinking he look, just go with me on this.
Sure, Roy.
Do you think he was serious?
Oh, he was absolutely serious. Yeah, he was serious.
See, I think he was pulling our leg.
No, he was not. No. He was serious.
I can't believe it.
Okay.
I can't believe it.
We'll never really know now.
I mean, that's why I was maybe a little bit more dismissive than I usually tend to be. I think he was having a little fun at our expense.
Okay. Okay, Ray. Let me transition somehow from that.
Yeah.
And we'll get back to going to give the callers a little bit of a rest for a moment.
Gee,
given
really?
Given that one guy's wife was talking about the laundry when I went to him, and then the other guy got you going, so let's just kind of talk amongst ourselves for a moment, shall
we?
Okay. And let's talk about the Phillies. We all heard Gabe Kapler on with Angelo this week. It was pretty compelling radio. I could point to both of those guys because each had a case to argue. Each argued their case very well.
I thought so.
And respectfully to each other, it got heated, but let me tell you something. I wish the U.S. Senate behaved. I never thought I would say these words. I wish the U.S. Senate used Angelo Cataldi as a model of decorum.
There you go.
There you have it.
And, yeah.
And the manager. But I was more concerned this week because Andy McPhail, the team president, came out of his groundhog hole for the first time all year and basically lowered expectations and said, yeah, you know, Machado, yeah, sure, Bryce Harper. But you know that 2019 class? Now, that's the one. And, you know, we really didn't have a lot of fans come out this offseason, this season, so I'm not sure the degree to which we can be spending. And that really bugged me. It was almost like a Bill Giles, we're a small market team moment to me.
It sort of struck me the same way, yeah.
I keep hearing that ownership is, you know, I got a whole bird in my pocket. I'm going to win or die trying.
That's what the owner says.
And now I got the team president saying, like, nah, you know, down the road, boy, things are really good. It's like, what, this is another process?
That was a real buzzkill. I agree
yeah.
with you. It's interesting to hear you say that because I didn't know if it struck other people the same way, but it certainly did me. Yeah, this isn't the time for the president to be talking like that because everything has been up to this point. It's all been about the offseason. It's all been about this offseason. It wasn't really about trying to win this year because even they said, well, we're not really built to win this year. But, oh, man, when you got, you know, with the money we have and players like Harper and Machado available, I mean, that's what everybody's been looking for. Okay, let's get through the season. Let's see if we can find some young players we can build with. But then in the offseason, then we're going to go get the guys who put us over the top. You bring the president out, and he says, yeah, not so much. That had the phones in the ticket office ringing off the hook, I'm sure.
Yeah, they're in some bad. They are in bad shape in terms of marketing and selling tickets, unless they make that dramatic plunge in the off season. Do you think he's just doing that to like slow the roll of the fans? He can't really.
Why would you want to do that?
I don't know.
Why would you want to slow the roll of your customers?
The way you tell your kids to like calm down before Christmas. That's all I can figure. You know what I mean?
No, you want the fans excited so they'll go spend money. Well, they'll come out and they'll buy tickets.
I don't know. I got no other reason.
It wasn't what I wanted to hear.
Not at all.
I'll tell you that much.
All right. In other news, the Philadelphia Flyers opened their season out in Las Vegas, a 10 o'clock start. I watched the first period. I watched a little bit into the second. And, man, they were good.
They really
played well. They play in Colorado tonight, another late start. It was a very good game for Brian Elliott, the goalie who, you know, I don't have a whole lot of faith in, but boy, it was a really nice game.
He played good.
Robert Haig played well, Simmons a couple of goals, and I'm telling you this, Ray, the big story for me this year is going to be Ivan Provorov is going to continue to ascend, and he's going to be one of the top finishers in the Norris voting. He's going to be one of the best defensemen in the league, and he's going to be a real, real star this year.
He's that level player. He's that skilled. I agree with you. Now, I don't know. I think hockey, like in all sports, it takes a little while before you kind of build your reputation to the point where you begin winning those trophies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the voters always tend to go with the people they know. But
superstars in the league these days.
Yeah, but
there's no Bobby Orr's or Chris Pronger's hogging that award.
Or Coffey's.
Or Paul Coffey, yeah.
I mean, guys like that. I mean, you may be right about that, but I agree, your basic point about that he is a star in the making, absolutely true. I mean, he is very, very good.
Yep. And the Sixers are played a game in Shanghai, and I still don't have a take on how they're going to be this year. I would like to think they're going to get better and challenge for the Eastern Conference title. I mean, there's reason to believe that. But I'm really interested in the marketing or the spin or whatever it is in terms of Markelle Fultz, who, hey, he made a three-pointer.
Mm-hmm.
Call Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
They are overselling this thing.
You think?
Yeah. You know, from the 150,000 jump shots to, like, look, he's taking shots. He's making a couple. Missing. I think he was 2 for 4 or something, but... Oh my God, he's there. He's the next superstar in the team.
Yeah,
they may be a little bit too aggressively pushing that agenda.
Don't you sometimes think that organization, that their approach to things is more about proving they're right than doing the right thing?
Yes, absolutely correct.
And I look at this and I see it exactly the same way. This is all about see, you said he couldn't shoot. Look at that. Look at that. Let's run that. Let's rack that up and run that one again.
Yeah, we better do it because there's only one.
Run it, and we'll run it again, and we'll do it in slow motion. Now we'll do it from the reverse angle.
Yeah.
Now we'll do it from hoop cam. And, you know, I mean, it's one jump shot in a preseason game.
Yeah.
And you know, all of a sudden, it's a big deal. I sometimes I get the feeling with the Sixers that so much of it is about that we know what we're doing. We know better than you. We're right. You're wrong. Why don't you just go build a team and win basketball games?
Listen, I hope he's all that, and maybe he is, but they're a little, to me, overly aggressively pushing the fact that he worked on it.
Yeah.
Okay, he worked on it. Let's go 20 games into the regular season before we decide that he's, you know, the next, I don't know, great shooter.
The next Reggie Miller.
Reggie Miller. That, there you go. Perfect name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that he's ever was that. I don't know if he's ever going to be that.
No.
They're trying to convince you of that.
Yes, they are. By the way, in other news, the Sixers, after years of never wanting to be the Sixers ownership and management, wanting to be tied with the trust the process, have now worked to trademark that.
Oh, really?
Yes. Which now, all of the people who were behind the process immediately decided they no longer want anything to do with the words. So that drama continues. Let's sneak in Lou here. Lou, you're on 94 WIP.
Hey, what's up, guys? How are you today?
Hey, Lou.
Hello, Lou.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Want to switch gears, Glenn? I was very optimistic about the Flyers the other night. Loved how they came out.
Yeah, it was really nice that you go on the road to start. You're playing at the barn. Love the hockey talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Western Conference, the team that was in the Stanley Cup Finals, and you beat them. It was a very nice opening win.
Yeah, it was good. And I think actually Elliott's going to turn it around this year because I think, Glenn, you hit the nail on the head. I think the defense is going to play so much better in front of him this year. Mm-hmm. To allow him, and if you know, obviously, pending he stays healthy, but I think he's going to have a much better year this year because they were showing before the game his numbers and then Fleury's numbers. I forget what it was because then they panned the Wayne Newton, and I threw up all over myself, and I can't remember what they showed. But their stats were very close last year, very comparable until he got hurt.
By the way, just as a side thing, did you see Wayne Newton at the beginning?
For the love of God.
You think he's had a little cosmetic surgery?
Holy,
is that what you're suggesting?
Cow, it's like Leatherface from Friday the 13th.
Yeah, I know.
It was bad.
I thought
they're playing.
They must be. They're playing this game in the Wax Museum.
Whose face do you think moves more today, his or Kenny Rogers?
As far as Elliott, you got, and Lou, thanks for the call. Good stuff. You got a long way to go before selling me on Brian Elliott. I think he's a fine, okay NHL goalie. There's 15, 20 of those around the league.
And they've all played here.
And yes, they've all cycled through here. Mason, every one of them. And I think that we are still – listen, Lou's point I think was a good point, which is if the defense is a lot better, your goalie looks better.
Sure.
But I don't know that he's a goalie I'm going to believe in the playoffs. And I'm still I'm watching the entire season with one eye waiting for Carter Hart.
I think a lot of people are. And the general manager is really pumped the brakes on that one. And he's put the kid down playing for the Phantoms. And it's obvious he's in no great hurry to get him up here. Because he doesn't want to rush him. I kind of get that. But, you know, I'm thinking, Ron Hextall, you got rushed. You know, I mean, you got rushed to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. I mean, you came up from the minor leagues, started the opener against the Edmonton Oilers, for heaven's sakes, and won the game and went on to have a great career. You know, sometimes if you're good, you're good. What are you waiting for? But, I mean, Elliott's okay. I mean, he's a competent veteran goalie.
But his
biggest problem is he's hurt all the time.
Yep.
And so's Neuvirth. So I still will stand by what I said to you a couple weeks ago. Is I didn't think Carter Hart would start the season with the big club, but I fully believe before the season's over, he's going to be here playing.
All right, we had January 1st for a cup of coffee versus a big soda.
Fair enough.
All right, I hope I lose. 888-729-9494. Let's see, we got somebody who wants to talk about Carson Wentz. Blame for Carson Wentz. Interesting. Somebody wants to talk about the game tomorrow. Somebody says the cornerbacks stink, and a call about Nick Foles' shot. Nick Foles, wow. Excuse me. Nick Foles is the backup quarterback. Ray, it's all blending together. I don't get enough sleep. And special, by the way, we have what we're watching coming up.
Okay.
And since neither you nor I watched anything of interest, special guest appearance. And this involves a network TV show that I'm dying to see but haven't. So I'm looking forward to the review from our producer, Kevin Keenan. 888-729-9494. Ray and Glenn on 94 WIP.